there's this sort of conflict because they're naturally curious, but they're also fearful of the unknown. So it's when it's in their control, a novel situation can be really enjoyable and a really positive experience. But conversely, when they're in a situation where it's being forced upon them and it's new and novel, it can be really fearful or fear and stressful for them too. So it's really about how much of a control they have over their situation.
Who knew cows like to be in control? Live cattle exports on the news, steaks, milkshakes, leather pants. I'm sure in some way in the last week you might have come into contact with a cow, though you might not have thought about it directly. Ann Jones with you, and this is Off Track on RN. So let's apply some thought to this, right? What do we really know about cattle, about their personality or their character, about how they perceive the world around them? I recently got my hands on a copy of the book Cow Talk from CSIRO Publishing, and I have to admit I was a bit stunned about how little I knew, but also how interesting these domesticated bovines are. So, pop quiz. How does a cow pass the time? They ruminate.
They'll sort of regurgitate the grass that they've been eating and re-chew it and re-swallow it. And that's part of, you know, helping the digestive process. But it also kind of, you know, gives them something to do.
Yummo. That's Rebecca Doyle from the University of Melbourne and one of the co-authors of Cow Talk. This ability to amuse themselves with an essentially internal activity is one of the potential reasons, according to Doyle, that cows are less likely to demonstrate stereotypic behaviours, that is, the repetitious movements like rocking or sucking, things that animals do when they're bored in an enclosure. So, the cows might be bored, but we might never know because they have this internal thing that they're doing to amuse themselves. So, from this, you might start to get the feeling that even though we've had a long relationship with this species, indeed, we humans formed this species, that they're a little cryptic, that their behaviours might not be as overt as you might have thought. My point is this: if we don't understand exactly what the cow is going through, how can we ensure that their welfare is up to an appropriate standard? Rebecca Doyle is from the Animal Welfare Science Centre, and I met her halfway between her place and mine at the University of Melbourne's agricultural campus at Dookie, near Shepparton. A herd of cows was being milked by robotic arms in a shed behind us, and the ones who had already been milked were chowing down on a pile of silage.
So how would you characterise their, for want of a better way of putting it, personality?
I think personality is a great word to use. Actually, there's we also refer to it as temperament because, well, they kind of are related. You know, humans, we refer to ourselves as having a personality, but animals definitely do as well. And sometimes that's referred to as a temperament because they can be sort of standardised. So in terms of their personality, well, gosh, they all have their own individual personalities. And I think that's something that maybe people don't recognize, you know, the same way as each dog is going to have a different personality. Well, the same thing happens in cows and the same thing happens in sheep and in chickens and everything. The traditional things that we think about in terms of personality are things like the level of inherent fear that they have. You know, you have some that are just more agitated or anxious than others, and that's just a natural difference that exists. So you have some that are, you know, conversely more bold and more adventurous. How calm they are as well as a part of their personality trait. But all of those sorts of things can be sort of adapted slightly. So the same way as how if you expose someone that's really scared of, I don't know, a certain situation, over time they become more habituated and you become more used to that situation that was originally really fearful for you. The same sort of thing can happen in all different types of animals. We can have them habituated over time and have them more relaxed and comfortable in the environments that we're working with them in.
Well, one thing that I really remember about cows from my childhood is the fact that they're always like the chorus in Greek tragedies, in that whenever something happened to you, you know, your car broke down or you fell over in the paddock, there'd always be a lineup of cows looking at you, sort of.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're so curious. They are so curious.
Cow facts.
Oh, yes. They are curious, but do they like jazz? French band Jazz for Cows play just that, jazz, New Orleans style, for cows up in the French Alps. Then they put the videos of the cows' reactions on the internet, and I've linked to a video on our website. And then there's this Nebraska farmer who plays a version of Lord's Royals,
and we'll never be royals,
to amuse his cows. He starts off, he's sitting in a picnic chair. You can just see the back of his cowdy hat and a trombone. He's facing a hill, it's an empty paddock. He starts playing, and then two little ears appear up over the hill, then four, then six, and then all of a sudden cows are streaming over the hill like some sort of curious army walking towards him. And by the time he finishes the song, there's 100 of them, and they're all about 2 metres away from him, listening intently.
Yeah, a little bit of agonistic behaviour there, that one. 1065 is getting a bit angry.
She has on either side of her about 1.5 metres, whereas everybody's starting to get bunched up now, and she's just moved someone on who's just squashed in between two other cows, so she's clearly a strong personality.
That's right. She would be sort of higher up in the dominance hierarchy, you know, a nice independent woman, likes her space around her.
Before us, we've got a herd of dairy cows that are in the process of being milked, so we've still got some behind us being milked. Within that group of cows, would there be a social structure?
Absolutely. There is definitely a social structure. And again, it comes down to those different personality types. You have some that are just more bold or more dominant. They're probably the ones that are out here. Whereas the ones that are a bit more kind of timid or submissive in that social structure are probably still coming through the milking system now. And that's a really normal thing. And that sort of social structure and that social hierarchy can be dependent on a variety of different factors, their temperament, like I said, but also, you know, the age of the cow and the experience is going to obviously influence where they sit in the hierarchy too.
How might that play out when they're out, say, grazing, for example? Does that hierarchy actually affect behaviours?
It would. Of course, you were going to have some of those more bold cows, or those that are sort of more dominant, are likely to lead the herd. So if they're going to a new grazing area or if they're coming in for milking, it's going to be led by those more dominant cows, and then those at the bottom of the hierarchy are going to be following at the tail end. In sort of, you know, where they're going and what they're doing, they tend to drive that sort of behaviour. In terms of structure of the herd, this herd has quite a stable structure. We have new cows that will join the milking herd once they calve, but generally that's a little bit of antagonistic behaviour that you can see there. So this one's kind of has just come in and has started to encroach on this one's feed area, and so she's just kind of given her a little bit of a, hey, man, you know, get your own dinner. But, you know, that's sort of as aggressive as it gets really with these cows. There's sort of really subtle behaviours that you'll be able to see.
That was sort of a bit of a head flick.
Yeah.
And a little bit of a stare down, I suppose, a really mini stare down, not a long one, no charging or anything. Is that what you'd expect?
Yeah, a little bit of a snort as well. But yeah, that's right. That's sort of, you know, just like a gesturing of the head towards the other one. That's a sort of an aggressive or an agonistic behaviour. Yep. Like all of us, but like all livestock species in particular, cows get are fearful, or they get agitated by things that are new and novel. You know, situations that they're unfamiliar with can be scary, and that's when they're out of their control. So there's this sort of, like, you know, a conflict because they're naturally curious, but they're also fearful of the unknown. So it's when it's in their control, a novel situation can be really enjoyable and a really positive experience, the same as how I feel. But you know, conversely, when they're in a situation where it's being forced upon them and it's new and novel, it can be really fearful and stressful for them too. So it's really about how much of a control they have over their situation.
How would they exhibit anxiety or fear?
Yep, so fleeing is the most dominant behaviour, so that fight or flight response, and that will result in a behavioural change where the animal tries to escape or flee. So if they're in a stressful situation, you might see them trying to push their way through and escape and rejoin the herd if they're isolated in particular. There are all sorts of behaviours that are really characteristic of a negative experience.
Which your comment just there brings to mind the fact that these are animals which enjoy being together, don't they? They, even if they dislike each other, they prefer to be with each other rather than alone.
Yep, absolutely. They've evolved as a social species, and so they like to have you know, the company of others, but also it's really from an evolutionary perspective, a safety thing. They're, you know, prey animals for all intents and purposes, and they've evolved to be in a group, and that's that sort of protection, the same as how, you know, those impala in Africa have that big herd structure, and that's what gives them protection from lions and all that sort of thing.
Cow facts.
Ah, yes, they are herd animals. And scientists have been noting the minimum number that it actually takes to make a herd, and they've found that 8 in a group is around the lower limit. That's when the cows start showing increased vigilance. So, does that mean that, in a manner, cows can count?
We are free-roving bovines. We run free.
You're on RN and this is Off Track. Anne Jones with you, and my guest today at Dookie in Northern Victoria is Rebecca Doyle, animal behaviour expert with the University of Melbourne. We're talking about how cows perceive the world, quite literally.
Cows have a really good vision, that's their most dominant sense. Their eyes are on sort of the side of their head compared to ours, where ours are facing forwards. So because our eyes are facing forwards, we have really good binocular vision. So we have great depth perception. We can see, you know, quite well into the distance. We can really judge so much better than they can how far away an object is. And that's what is, you know, beneficial to us and how we operate and how we function. With cows, because their eyes are placed to the side of their heads, they have some binocular focus, so they can see relatively well straight ahead of them. But the benefit is that they actually have a larger range of vision, so they can see, you know, way past their shoulders, which we can't. As a result, their blind spot is a lot smaller, and the more you can see, the less likely you are to have someone sneak up behind you. So that's why they've evolved to have their eyes on the sides of their heads.
Now, the lack of depth perception, how might that play out for a farmer?
Things like small steps or cracks in the concrete, puddles of water and things like that can cause them to balk or stop moving. And that's because it's really difficult for them to see how safe it is for them to step. That's why things like cattle grids, you might have seen them in the roads, that's how they work.
Wait a second.
Cow facts.
Cattle grids, the Gandalf of the cattle world. I've always wondered how such a simple thing's kept such a big animal from crossing a space.
The cow could easily step across it, those sort of, you know, bars of metal in the road, but because there's nothing underneath, that works on that depth perception and it causes them to balk and not cross those bars.
But a similar thing could happen, say, if there was a sharp line of light to dark, so light to shadow, they might not be able to tell that it's only shadow and instead think that there's a dirty great big hole there.
That's exactly right. So going from areas of light to dark is something that's really unnatural for them, and that's because of that depth perception. But at the same time, it's also got to do with, you know, like, fear of what's ahead. You know, you're not going to walk into a dark room voluntarily because you don't know what's in there. So that plays on that sort of innate fear that they have for unknown situations.
What about the other senses? They have beautiful ears that they seem to have quite a bit of movement. They can move them up and down and around a little bit, not completely, but do they have a good sense? I mean, are they listening right
yes,
now? Probably.
They are, definitely. Their sense of hearing is sort of the second most dominant sense. And like you pointed out, they can move those ears, you know, back and forwards. They can move independently of each other as well, which again really helps them to pinpoint where a sound's coming from. So if it's coming from the left, if it's coming from the right, behind them or in front of them, they actually have the ability to detect that a lot better than what we do. And again, you know, that's an evolutionary benefit for them. One really cool thing that we're starting to look at in animal welfare science is actually what the position of the ears mean in terms of how they're feeling about things too. So you can actually look at when they've got their ears back. A position of ears back in sheep is related to sort of a fearful or a negative situation. And in cattle as well, there seems to be a bit of aggression associated with ears back. We're sort of trying to validate those ear positions at the moment. But that's something that's definitely we're looking into as a research area.
You know, as people drive past pastures full of dairy cows, they probably don't look at them and think that they're a very communicative species. Is that a correct assumption?
No, I don't think it's a correct assumption at all. They have a lot of really subtle communications with each other, and we can see that just as we're looking at them here. You know, there's that dominant cow that we were talking about before has sort of managed to really, you know, push all of the others out of the way. There's others that are feeding really close by each other and seem to not being bothered by it all, seem to be really enjoying it. You know, you'll have sort of mutual grooming that will occur too. Not so commonly, but that's definitely something that will occur, and that's like a bonding behaviour.
What about vocalisation?
Yeah, vocalisations too, definitely. So they'll have different ranges of vocalisations. The most common ones are sort of, you know, communication when they're isolated, and that's how they can communicate with the herd to find out where the herd is and rejoin if they're by themselves.
What might she be saying?
I don't know. I don't know who she's calling to. She's got a big load of feet in front of her, and she's, you know, with the rest of the bunch. But she looks like she's looking around. So whether or not there's someone at the end of the herd that's still waiting to be milked that she's trying to communicate with, I don't know. That's one of the best challenges of working with animals, is that unlike you and I, they can't communicate directly with us, so we need to look at all these novel, subtle indicators of what they are thinking about and how they are feeling, how healthy they are and how happy they are.
Cow facts.
Have you noticed how we're talking about cows here, females, cows? Yes, well, that's because about 85% of all dairies in Australia use artificial insemination. It's really very rare for a bull to be let loose in a paddock of dairy cows on this continent. The cows are artificially inseminated, and the genetic traits from that are often tracked too by the Australian Dairy Herd Improvement Scheme. To get a good rate of fertilisation, you want to be inseminating when the cow is on heat. Her eggs are primed and ready to go. But how do you know? You have to be looking at her behaviours, hoping to see something that a bull might pick up if he had the chance.
So there's actually like a lot of mounting that will happen, cows mounting other cows, that's an indicator. But when she's about to come onto heat as well, her movement will increase really significantly. So she'll just walk around a lot more, maybe like sort of a seeking behaviour or something. And, you know, so farmers can actually track that by putting like a pedometer, you know, or an activity logger on their cows and track how much movement she's doing, and that can be an early indicator of heat.
How might I be able to look at a cow and understand she's feeling unwell?
They just are less vibrant, they're slower in their movements. They might, you know, change their position and how they behave when they come in for milking. That's something that we can actually look at. Change in herd position is something we're looking at as an indicator of an oncoming health condition.
All of these, what could be very subtle indicators towards an illness, really rely on the farmer having quite an intimate pattern of observation of the herd.
Yeah, definitely. So we were talking with the farmer before. The first cow had come in for milking, and he could automatically tell from that cow's behaviour that there was a blockage in the feed line, and that's because she was in the milker for about 30 seconds and she had her head up and was looking around and, you know, as if to say, hey mate, where's my food? And having an understanding of the behaviour of the animal is going to give you a much greater understanding of how it's feeling and how it's producing and all that sort of stuff.
Why should we care that whether a cow is happy?
Well, there's a whole variety of different reasons. First and foremost, if she's happy and she's healthy, then we can be confident that the product we're producing is good and is going to be of high quality. So that's just on a baseline kind of economic level. But as well as that, you know, these are animals that we have domesticated and we have in our care for our benefit. And so, you know, it's our responsibility, I believe, to care about their welfare and as well as how well they're producing. One of the reasons why it's really important to care about their welfare is because we know through all these different scientific measures that these animals can feel pain and they can, you know, be stressed and feel anxiety and feel fear. We also know that they can feel like, you know, more positive emotions too. And just that the knowledge of that makes it, I believe, our responsibility that we can kind of reduce those negative experiences as much as possible and increase those positive experiences as much as possible.
It's important to acknowledge here on a number of fronts that animal welfare must be talked about. Think of the recent debates about live export, but also the practices of calf removal, which is a necessity in a large-scale dairy environment. But let's step back and think about these issues from a point of view of the domestication of cattle over the last 8,000 years. At first, cattle were wild and free, but they had the risk of hunger and of predators knocking them off. So in return for them providing milk, meat and leather, we gave them consistent food and protection from other predators. So domestication isn't just about taming that wild animal, it's a long-term process of breeding as well, as we select the animals that most suit our needs. And for thousands of years, the farmers have been melding that evolution of cows to suit the conditions and desired products. That's how we have meat specialist breeds and milk specialist breeds, for example. But as we continue breeding, the drive for production becomes ever greater, and along with that, there is a risk that the welfare of the individual animals is impinged. At some point in domestication, our breeding must hit their biological potential, and if the drive for production continues to rise beyond that, the welfare of the animal will certainly be a casualty to economics. So, what is the social contract that we have with cattle? At what point is this deal unfair? When what we're asking to take from this animal is greater than what we provide for it. On RN, you're listening to Off Track. I'm Anne Jones, and my guest today is Rebecca Doyle.
Some really interesting research that's been done at the Animal Welfare Science Centre is looking at differences in individual milkers or handlers and how that affects the behaviour of cows. So you can actually look and see those people that are calmer and quieter with the cows actually get a better milk yield from them because they're more calm as well, the cows, and they also have less fearful behaviours and less kicks and tail swishes and all that sort of negative behaviour as well. And that's a really interesting thing to kind of consider what our impact is on these animals as well on a day-to-day basis.
How can we communicate? Say, how does a farmer say to these girls, I want you to go to the end of the paddock and head out the gate? How might a farmer do that?
Oh, there's lots of different ways. And that's something that these farmers here have to consider all the time. If you consider how the cows are milked, it's quite a complex system. They need to come in voluntarily from the paddock. They need to come in through these raceways and gates that mightn't be so logical to them, but quite logical to us. Come into the milker after they've finished milking, find their way back out. So the farmer needs to train them to do all that sort of thing and get them comfortable to do that. The way that there's a variety of different ways you go about it. So repetition and keeping everything the same is important because once they learn, it's easier for them to remember and recall it. And it makes them much faster with their movements. As well as that, though, making sure things are kind of like cow logical are important. So keeping in mind the sorts of things that are going to make them balk or that they're going to be fearful of and the things that they don't like, removing those obstacles are going to help the flow. And as well as that, kind of making those changes sort of step by step. So you might use feed to encourage them in the first place and then they'll know where they need to go. Have the gate set up to kind of have this natural flow and keep them as a group as well so they're not isolated or have to move into a dark area by themselves.
If you wanted to move a cow, how can you use their personal space?
Yeah, okay, so personal space or flight zone is something that we can use to move animals, and that's really that sort of safety distance where the animal feels like it's not being threatened by you. If you want an animal to move, you can start to penetrate that safety zone and then they'll move to re-establish it. So that might be taking a step backwards or taking a couple steps backwards. Flight distance as well is a way that we can actually look at, you know, how fearful animals are of us. So if an animal that's not handled very often or has been handled in a negative way is going to have a greater flight zone than an animal that hasn't.
So that sort of plays out if you can imagine mustering cattle from the outback who very rarely have human contact compared to these ladies who have human contact three times a day. So in those cases, the mustering can be done from a motorbike at a distance of 20 to 30 metres because their flight zone is so great compared to these ladies who we'd probably have to approach pretty close, I'm imagining, to get them to actually move in a direction we're seeking.
Cow facts.
Of course, some cows are so habituated to humans that they're completely comfortable being photographed and cuddled and led around, like Blossom. The world's tallest cow ever. That's her official title, according to the Guinness Book of World Records. She was 190 centimetres tall from hoof to withers.
I'm Patty Hansen, and this is my friend Blossom. There are dangerous moments when handling Blossom when she has to go to the bathroom. You want to get as far away as possible because she's been known to splatter up to 8 feet.
Blossom's owner, Patty Hansen, who you heard there in a bit of video from the Guinness World Records website, said the funny thing about Blossom was how unaffected she was by all the attention that seemed to surround her. I suppose we'll never really know what Blossom thought or learnt on her Guinness World Record journey. She passed away in May 2015.
Cows have excellent spatial learning and spatial cognition. Obviously, that's how they need to get around. But the different ways that they're raised can also affect their learning and cognition too. So some really interesting studies that have just been done from the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, Canada, have shown that the ways you actually raise calves can have an influence on how readily they can learn tasks. So, for example, if they're housed in pairs or with other groups of calves, they actually have improved learning and cognition compared to if they're housed individually. That's just really fascinating in itself, that that sort of early life experience can influence, you know, their learning. But if we actually think about it from a practical point of view, that's really important. These cows have to learn all this new stuff. They need to learn and adapt to robotic milkers, how to come into the dairy, how to be a part of the herd, all these different things that they need to learn and be exposed to. If you can help facilitate that, you know, make it easier for that cow to learn that, it's going to adapt better to the conditions that we're keeping them in, and that's going to have benefits to their welfare potentially. So that's a really interesting area that we're starting to focus on, and research in animal welfare is really starting to focus on cognition in general. You know, how do animals process information? We know that looking at how they process information can give us can give us an insight into how they're feeling about things, the same way as we are optimistic or pessimistic by nature, but also by how we're feeling, depending on our mental state. We can measure the same sorts of things in animals as well. And that's a really interesting up-and-coming area of research.
So despite sort of spending thousands of years with this species, we still have a lot to learn.
Oh, yes, so much. You know, the difference in communication. We still have so much to learn within ourselves on how we function and how we think about things. And we can communicate directly with each other. You know, with the animals that we work with, we can't communicate with them directly. We need to look at all these different indirect signals. So we look at indirect measures of physiology, of behaviour and of cognition to all give us an insight altogether as to how they're feeling about their situation.
Rebecca Doyle is the co-author of Cow Talk, along with John Moran, and it's published through CSIRO Publishing. Dr. Doyle is with the University of Melbourne and the Animal Welfare Science Centre. You should head over to the website. I took a photo of a cow that looks like it has jerry curls. Plus, I put links to the videos of the cows appreciating brass instruments. I'm Anne Jones, and this is RN's Off Track. Remember to head over to the website, Twitter or Instagram, or all of them, to discuss your favourite cattle observations with me before next week. And in the meantime, I'll do my best to prepare a picnic for next week's journey when I'll take you somewhere else.